Thank you. Be seated.
Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Gibson Hill and Company Incorporated versus Cabarrus County Appraisal District and others.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Bill Eichert, and I, together with Bill Kilgarland and Charmin Lundstrom, sitting at the council table, are here in representation of the petitioner in this case, Gifford Hill and Company. This is a property tax case brought by Gifford Hill for the 1987 tax year under the Tax Code Chapter 42 and the Texas Uniform Declaratory Judgments Act. It is an appeal from the trial court in Wise County's denial of Gifford Hill's summary judgment and the granting of summary judgment as to Gifford Hill's entire case on behalf of the respondents, the Wise County taxing authorities, the more particularly the Wise County Appraisal District and Appraisal Review Board, as well as this is an appeal from the Fort Worth Court of Appeals affirming those orders by the trial court. The subject property in this case is 2,500 roughly contiguous acres of land in Wise County, under which is embedded a rich vein and deposit of limestone. It is the limestone rock reserves underneath Gifford Hill's property in Wise County that is the subject of this dispute. Let me say at the outset that because of the time limitations of which I am extremely aware imposed by the rules of this court, I'm going to try just to hit the high points of several of the arguments made in our brief. Please don't infer, Your Honors, that because I don't mention anything today that does appear in our brief, that that should minimize its import or value as far as our argument is concerned. But please feel free to ask, and I invite you to ask any questions you might have with respect to those arguments, which I don't directly deal with on my argument.
Mr. Anker, why did you abandon your complaint about the valuation of the limestone reserve?
Justice Hightower, that's a good question, and it's one that I have been addressing ever since we first argued this before the court in Wise County. And I'd like to make it very clear to yourself and to the other members of the court that the reason that Gifford Hill abandoned its valuation claim had nothing to do with Gifford Hill's agreement with the taxing authorities that the value of the rock reserves was as assigned by the Appraisal Review Board, that $7.5 million figure. To the contrary, I think it's fair to say that Gifford Hill still disputes that amount. There are a number of non-monetary, non-valuation issues at play here, Justice Hightower, the most important of which is, I think as everyone knows, the aggregate business is a business that is based on a very low profit margin, and therefore its information concern, internal information with respect to sales and expenses and so forth, is extremely confidential and proprietary in the nature of trade secrets, and it just was a basic decision on the part of the company not to make that information available, which it knew it would have to if it continued to assert its excessive valuation claim. Secondarily, the appraisal district appraised the value of the surface estate of Gifford Hill's 2,500 acres in 1986 and again in 1987 at $800 an acre, and giving that same property a productivity value for the open space land doctrine appraisal of $57 an acre. Gifford Hill doesn't dispute that value, Your Honor, and that's one of the main reasons why we dropped our claim. If our argument is correct, and limestone is not a mineral for the purposes of the tax code, and it cannot be severed from the surface estate, as was done by the appraisal district, then the value ascribed to the property by the appraisal district is not disputed.
Then is it your contention that only the items listed under Section 1.04 are subject to having any value placed on them at all by the district?
Well, not completely, Your Honor. It is our argument that all elements of real property in Texas are subject to property tax. We are not disputing that limestone rock is one of those elements and should be subject to tax. But what we are saying is that the legislative categories embodied in Section 104.2 are not legislative make-weight. They have a reason, and that all property must fit into one of those categories. We're saying that the district court and the Court of Appeals, by suggesting and in fact holding that limestone rock could fit into any one of these categories, land, minor quarry, mineral in place, or an estate in one of those, in effect renders the entire system of categories meaningless. And we're saying that because it is our opinion that limestone is not a mineral for the tax, for purposes of the tax code, then there's only one category in which it can fall, and that is the land itself. And that's our, that is our argument, Your Honor.
So do you say then that the limestone reserves can be taxed if they're taxed as part of the land?
Absolutely.
So this, the valuation here could have been very high to account for the limestone reserves, but the fact that it wasn't in this case is settles it for the for this case.
Well, yes, Your Honor. There are two parts to that position, though, that I think it's important for us to talk about, and that's a very good question. First, we definitely think the limestone rock should be taxed in Texas. It should be taxed as a part of the land. Now, the arguments made by the taxing authorities are, well, that's a duplicitous argument, and that it's disingenuous because, in effect, the value of the land should have been some $6,000 an acre or something. I can't remember what it is that they suggest that it is, and that value has been lost, has escaped taxation. And our position is that there are two kinds of value at issue here. One is fair market value, what a willing buyer would pay to a willing seller for this land as of January 1st, 1987. That is determined by the exercise of Section 2301 appraisal methodology, the exercise and employment of generally accepted appraisal techniques to appraise the land. Now, that's most properly done by comparative sales, and in fact, that's what was done by the appraisal district when it applied its land schedule in 1986 and 1987 and arrived at the $800 an acre value for the surface in 87 and for the land in 86. There's the other value involved in here is the productivity capability value, which is inherent in the open space land doctrine, which is embodied in Article 8, Section 1D1 of the Constitution. This land is entitled, Gifford Hills, 2,500 acres, except for that limited small portion, which is actually contains the minor quarry itself, the hole in the ground and the attendant equipment. That 2,500 acres qualifies under the open space land doctrine. There isn't any dispute about that. In fact, Gifford Hill has been paying a productivity value of $57 an acre on that property since the tax code went into effect, at least with respect to all relevant periods in this case, including 86, including 87, all the way up to the present day. So you've got two different values at work here. One is market value, $800 an acre, or it could be, let's say, you know, $5,000 an acre for purposes of argument, but that's not the applicable value. The applicable value is the $57 an acre productivity value on the non-producing property.
Is that open space, is that the same thing as the agricultural exemption tax?
Well, I think those two statutes are used interchangeably for the purposes of the vernacular and public discussion, but they are in fact different statutes. There is Article 8, Section 1D, and then which is the ag use constitutional authority, and then there's Article 8, Section 1D1, which is open space land. But basically, their treatment is exactly the same in reality.
Is cattle run on this property?
Yes, sir. the property is leased to an adjoining property owner for the purposes of grazing cattle, and that's how it qualifies and has qualified for the preceding 5 years for open space land treatment.
How many head or run per acre?
I don't know, Your Honor. That's not in the record. Another thing it's important for you all to understand is there is a argument being made here that this is that this particular value, the $7.5 million, is going to be lost forever to the taxpayers of Wise County, and that this is particularly egregious because of the nature of strip mining and because of the depressed economy, and for you name it, they've raised every other issue why Gifford Hill is being so evil in this case. The fact of the matter is that they failed to mention rollback taxes, which are inherent in the open space land doctrine statutes. That is, as the agricultural use ceases to exist and the conditions change, the use changes, the land is amenable to, and the appraisal district is required to roll back the taxes for 5 years preceding the change in use and apply the market value, which would have been applied if the productivity value hadn't been. So the 5 years of the market value the difference between the market value and the productivity value will be recouped.
Well, now, you start mining this, and then what's going to happen to the taxes?
I'm sorry, I start mining it.
If Gifford Hill actually starts mining.
Well, it is our position that there is a portion of the property which it doesn't qualify for ag use or open space land, and that is the portion which is the subject of immediate quarrying and mining and some reasonable acreage around that site which can be expected.
And then there's a recapture back for 5 years? So
that's our position, yes, sir. I think the facts of the case are that that's not what the appraisal district did, but it yet hasn't, but we expect that they probably will.
That's your suggestion?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
On how to, yeah. On how this
that's how it should operate. That's our interpretation of the rule.
So if the reserves would be subject to tax that way, but not, what about the reserves under the rest of the property that is not being mined?
Well, it's sort of, there are two different ways of looking at that, Justice Tech. One is, if the limestone is determined by this court to be a mineral, then there is a specific statute which applies to that, section 2317, which applies to an interest in a mineral which is mined or quarried but is not presently being produced. And that under that circumstance, the value is set by statute as being appraised by as if the property were not being produced, that is, by generally accepted comparable sales methodology, which would result in an $800 an acre.
Is the term limestone reserves or rock reserves used anywhere in the law?
No, sir.
Do any other states have provisions to tax non-productive rock quarries or reserves?
No, not that we're aware of, Your Honor. We haven't been able to find any cases.
So the reserve is something, the idea, concept of reserve, is not recognized in law.
We haven't been able to find anything. I want to use the word unearth anything, but that has anything that is analogous to this situation in any other jurisdiction, Justice Hightower. We have found, though, that in the other states, there is a consistent holding with this court along with the line of cases ending in Mosier 2, that for oil and gas purposes in the interpretation of conveyances, that limestone is not considered to be a mineral like oil and gas is.
But minerals are often referred to as reserves.
And often, and in fact, quite regularly.
But the difference is that rock, whether it be sedimentary or igneous, is not considered a mineral.
That's certainly our position. We would have this court reject the scientific definition of minerals the same way you did in Mosier and in Heinz v. Allen and the other cases interpreting oil and gas cases. Otherwise, to use the scientific definition There isn't a definition, by the way, of minerals in the tax code, and that's one of the reasons why this case is a case of first impression and why it's so important to you all. The reason you need to do that is because the scientific definition taken to its logical conclusion includes virtually every type of earthen property, everything from the topsoil down to the very bottom of the earth, water, sand, mud, all of it.
So a farmer that has lived on some alluvial land where the topsoil may be 100 feet deep, and he chooses to sell that off to a land or to be in the landscape business and sell that, that dirt would be a reserve, wouldn't it?
It certainly would be interpreted that way under the way in which the taxing authorities in Wise County have administered the relevant statutory provisions since 1987. Yes, Justice Hightower. I realize my time has expired.
Let me ask you a question. If you have more time, just give us the outline of what the other points.
Okay. The outline is that I don't need to explain to this court what the standard for appeal from a summary judgment is. I mean, you all have written volumes on that, and even the Court of Appeals in Fort Worth saw fit to recite some of this court's holdings with respect to that. I believe that it did that and then turned around and ignored them. But nonetheless, the standards are pretty clear. In this, clearly, if there is a disputed issue of a material fact, summary judgment is precluded. It's our argument, and I think we set it out in detail in our brief, that there are at least two material, in fact, dispositive fact issues. One relates to our argument concerning multiple appraisal. We say that the property was appraised twice in 1987. They say it wasn't. Whether or not it was is a material issue of fact that is clearly in dispute. The other question is how much of Gifford Hill's property is being produced in the context of Section 2317. That's a material fact question. Similarly, obviously, the movement has to be entitled to judgment as a matter of law. We say the court erroneously interpreted and applied the tax code, in particular Section 104, when it's, as I've already said, when it basically suggested and held that 104.2 has no meaning, that the classifications are meaningless. That's the basic outline of our position, Justice Phillips.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Please, the court. I'm Russell Graham. I'm with the firm of Plum, Linebarger & Graham, and I'm here today with Peter Lowe, representing the respondents of the Wise County Appraisal District and the Wise County Appraisal Review Board. I see my role today as being one to try and focus this court's attention on what the true nature of this litigation is. And I think that's going to be a difficult task because petitioners have never had a coherent theory of what they want out of this case. From the administrative level on, what they have done is change their arguments, change their issues at each level of this proceeding. In fact, at least three of the points in their application for writ appear here before this court for the first time. Points 1B5, 1C, and 1D. Never argued before and not supported by evidence in this record. I think the only way I can really direct the court's attention to what this case is about is to
Are you claiming those points are waived under our procedural rules?
I think they are, Your Honor. They have not been properly preserved. They weren't at the Court of Appeals and they weren't at the trial court. And I'll explain why I feel that way. To really get the court's attention directed to what this case is about, I frankly have to start and talk about what it is not about. The court is aware, I think, already from the first questions that this is not a case about value. On page 10 of the transcript, you'll find a formal abandonment of any claim regarding excessive valuation. It's not about, although their brief and the briefs of a couple of the amicus parties indicate that it's about unequal appraisal, it's not about that. They formally abandoned on page 18 of the transcript any claim related to unequal appraisal. Now, it's cutely worded. It says, we abandon any claim related to the median level of appraisal. But if you'll look at the statute that was in effect, 4226, in 42.26 in 1987, median level of appraisal is, in fact, the test you have to address in order to raise a claim of unequal appraisal. So they have abandoned value, they have abandoned any claim that they're treated unequally, and they have done so in face of Section 4209 of the tax code, which says the remedies provided herein are exclusive. So those issues are out of this case, even though they appear in their writ. It's also not about whether this property is taxable. Petitioners have repeatedly conceded that it's taxable. It is not about, although...
How is it taxed?
That's exactly the question.
Your position is that you can tax the value of the the limestone in place, the reserve, with the real estate.
That's correct.
So does that mean that you could sort of go around Wise County or any county in this state and see whether there was limestone underlying the property and get some appraisal of the value of those reserves and raise the, appraise the property accordingly?
If the limestone in and of itself contributes value to the property that would not otherwise exist, then the answer to your question is yes.
Well, how would it not?
Excuse me?
How would it not?
Well, how would it not? How would it not is that it is, as one mentioned earlier, buried under 100 feet of overburden. It's not economically possible to clear that overburden and extract that lignite.
But if a person's house is sitting 10 feet above a limestone deposit, worth some amount of money, the tax, the valuation of that property could be adjusted accordingly for those reserves.
If they had value. Maybe the best way to answer you is give a, although we don't think it's an issue in this case, to give a brief description of how we value this property. It's undisputed from the facts in the record that what Gifford Hill has on this property, on this 2,500 acres, is approximately 35 years worth of reserves based at current levels of production. The way we appraise that property is we did an income approach based on the historical production, projecting that historical production out into the future. It is basically a capitalization of projected income. It's the same technology, the same procedure used to value oil and gas properties, lignite reserves, and other minerals.
Is that the statutory basis for it, that you're using a statutory analysis on predicting valuation of reserves?
It is our position that we not only use generally accepted but also time-honored appraisal techniques.
Use of minerals.
That's correct.
But is this time-honored as far as rock is concerned?
Candidly, no. And the reason is no one has had the nerve up to this point to take on the aggregate industry. Gifford Hill has finally decided, Wise County finally decided to do that.
In this state or any other states?
I think there are, in fact, other properties that are appraised in this property that are similar in nature. Gravel reserves, lignite reserves. If we want to talk about what is a mineral.
But are there any statutory authority for taxing reserves, rock reserves, any kind of reserve other than metal?
Certainly. If you look at Section 2317, it was added to the code to specifically describe how you value properties that can be removed by surface mining and quarrying. Now, what kind of mineral would we be talking about removed by quarrying unless we're talking about rock? And it addresses how you do that on property that's not in production. And what it basically says is, in response to your question, the value of the components cannot exceed the value of the whole. So if you've got limestone that is so far away from being produced that it contributes no value to the property, then even its existence doesn't change the taxable value of the property.
Does the surface make a difference? In other words, if this 2,500 acres was divided into 7,500 residential lots, would that make it not economically feasible and therefore...
Certainly, because we would agree with petitioner that this is not a high-value mineral. It has to be produced in volume in order to make money from it. You cannot economically go in and remove other improvements in order to dig out the limestone. The economics of that situation are just non-existent. And in fact, you can rarely justify doing that even with something like lignite or iron.
Basically, what you're talking about is commercial availability.
Commercial availability?
If it's not commercially available, it doesn't add to the value.
That's exactly right.
What it was already. What about the other side's argument regarding the current agricultural use, the open land, and the rollback provision?
Okay. Let me make one point before I get to that because I think it's crucial, and that is in our valuation procedure, all of our value is projected basically on the first 10 years of production. We use a 10-year forecast. The bulk of the value is in the first 6 years of production because we used a capitalization rate of 15% on the projected income. All of the $7.5 million that's in this case is mineral that's going to be produced in the relatively near future. We haven't put a value on over two-thirds of Gifford Hills limestone. So there's some false issues been raised in some of the briefs that once they opened the hole, the entire 2,500 acres was added to the roll. That's not what happened. We have added value that represents the income that will be received in the relatively near future, and that is the standard approach used on oil and gas properties and others.
So now, it's fewer than 2,500 acres that we're talking about?
Their total reserves are approximately...
I'm talking about the tax, taxes imposed, or it's on fewer than 7,500?
Certainly, because they have 35 years of reserves, and we only use 10 years of that to project our value.
Oh, you're talking about reserves, though, not talking about the space.
Right.
You're
We have no way of determining which part of that 2,500 acres they're going to move into next.
Well, you're talking about authority for... saying that this is reserve and you're going to tax it.
Your Honor, I think what we're talking about is how do you calculate value? We know that there is over 100 million tons of limestone under the Gifford Hill property. We projected in our valuation approach that they're going to produce approximately 3 million tons a year. So over the next 10 years, they'll produce about a third of that total reserve.
And you didn't project that they're going to use the rock under track A this year, track B next year, and track C. You just took it all and said that over a period of years and all of it will go.
We tried to project what the value of that limestone would be to a third-party purchaser and recognize that they're not going to pay a whole lot for limestone that won't be produced until 30 years from now. What they will pay for is the limestone that they're going to receive an income flow on in the immediate future.
But that immediate future you defined as 10 years.
We used the cash flow based on 10 years of income.
And you really included the whole 2,500 acres. You just assumed you didn't know where in the 2,500 acres, and you took a portion of what could have come from the entire 2,500.
We really didn't try and do that at all. What we said was their historic rate of production is thus. The only part of that production that's going to contribute to immediate value because of the discounted value of money over time is what occurs in the first 10 years. And we projected the income based on a historical production and we capitalized it to get a value in current dollars. And the net result of that was that we wouldn't go further than 10 years because the capitalization rate we use means that in the 11th year any income is meaningless anyway. It contributes nothing.
Is this just a one year shot, or are you going to do the same thing in 88?
I'm going to do the same thing every year.
For 10 years. And so in 1998, you'll do...
It's the same thing we do on an oil and gas property.
And it's a net number, in your opinion, and not a gross number.
It is a net number. That's correct.
That it is relatively expensive.
We do exactly the same thing on an oil well. We go out there and we look at what historical production has been, what their cost of production has been, and what they're receiving for their product. And we project how far into the future that well is going to continue to produce at those levels. If it's in decline, we project a decline in production. If it still has a stable level of production, we predict that.
What if somebody has a farm that's 2,500 acres that has the same $100 million, whatever it was, of limestone reserves under it?
but it's not owned by Gifford Hill. Is it the same tax treatment?
First off, let me say that that's outside the record. There's no evidence
with
regard to that.
We're not going to be writing 100 of these opinions.
My response would be that there's no value there. Unless there's some indication that some of that limestone is going to be produced near enough in time that it has some economic worth.
What?
So if Gifford Hill owns the property, you should tax it, but if Farmer Jones owns it, you can't.
If the limestone has an economic value.
Well, it has whatever value it has.
We're taxing it everywhere.
I mean, oil and gas reserves are not taxed this way, are they?
They are.
It has to be an oil and gas
company
have a lease before it's taxed, and if it's just potentially...
Oil and gas, if you have no production, basically in the state of Texas, you have no tax. Because you have no way of forecasting whether the mineral's truly there, and you have no way of projecting what it's worth.
But we know this is there, and if Gifford Hill sells this to Farmer Jones and leaves, and Farmer Jones has no intention ever of mining the limestone, what are you going to tax this, limestone or not?
It would no longer be a producing quarry operation.
Well, so you're relying on Section 104.1C?
We're relying basically on several of these, and I think, you know...
Council, can I ask you a question? Many farmers and ranchers own bottom land, because it backs up to a river. And that's often good grazing land for cattle, and they cut their hay for the winter season there. But that same bottom land also has sand and gravel, and there is a commercial value on sand and gravel. Now, does that mean that every farmer and rancher in the state that uses that land for raising hay and for grazing cattle is going to be taxed next year on the value of the sand and gravel?
No. No, it
Why?
Does not. Because you have to look at the economic value of that. First off,
let me ask you one question that's a corollary to this, and I believe you can respond to both of them at the same time. If Farmer Brown decided that he wanted to stop farming and he wanted to stop running cattle on his property, and he contracted with someone to come in and start mining or gave rights to mine on his property, would you then institute the rollback that was alluded to by the other side? Would you go 5 years back in reappraising the value and tax it on that basis?
Certainly. If they change the use from
agriculture... So it's not lost.
Yes, it is. If, in fact, the production is 10 years out or 20 years out, and that's going to contribute some value to current day, and as I said, our approach uses a 10-year forecast. Basically, we're going to lose that value for the 5th through 10th year because by the time we get to that, the 5-year rollback period doesn't recapture that value at all.
Is there a...
But you said most of the value is in 6 years.
That's true.
So you're really losing 1 year.
But keep in mind, I mean, one of the things we've got to address here is the language that's found in 2352.F. 23.52F. Specifically prohibits us from adding or including in the open space valuation the value contributed by minerals. It says the appraisal of minerals or subsurface right to minerals is not within the provision of this subchapter. Keep in mind what we're dealing with here in reality. Ag value on this property is $57 an acre. Gifford Hill paid $6,000 to $7,000 an acre. The total value of the property is $15 million.
Are you quarreling with the agricultural exemption statute?
Not at all. We've granted them an ag exemption on $2 million worth of value for the surface.
In order for you to prevail, must we find that the rock is mineral?
I think that it is either mineral or it is a minor quarry. But even if it's in land.
Even if it's reserve, it's a minor quarry?
Even if you tell us it's in land. We, under the provisions of 2352F, have to go back and exclude from the land qualified for ag use the appraisal of the mineral value.
Does the state impose a severance tax for the extraction of rock?
I really don't know, Justice Gammage. I'm not sure.
Counselor, can I get back to my question about the sand and gravel that's in the bottom land? Are you going to tax that farmer and rancher next year? Because there is a very valuable, and there's a market for sand and gravel. Because the trucks go up and down the I-30, up and down the freeway all the time. So next year, is he going to be taxed on the sand and gravel?
My, my, my general response is that, to that is no, and here's the reason. First off, there's no evidence in this record that any proven reserves of lignite, limestone, have been omitted from our rolls. Not one shred of evidence that proven reserves exist. Secondly, you've got to look and see where that deposit is.
If right that, on the surface.
All right. If it's right on the surface and it's actively being mined, then yes, it's going to have value. But the fact of the matter is, in most cases, it won't have value because it's so far from production. The value it will eventually contribute is worth nothing in today's dollars. And that's what we're talking about here. We've got an instance where we've got proven reserves, we've got active production from those reserves, and they have a value in current dollars of $7.5 million. Purely attributable to the limestone, not attributable to the agricultural capabilities of this property.
If Farmer Jones, who has 100 acres of bottom land with sand and gravel, is selling that sand and gravel to be trucked into Austin or trucked into Houston, but Farmer Smith, who's right next door and who owns the second 100 acres, is running cattle and cutting hay off his, and he's got the same sand and gravel, will Farmer Smith, the one who owns the second 100 acres, will he be taxed on the sand and gravel?
If his sand and gravel has an economic value and it's close enough to production, the answer should be yes.
Counsel, let me get you back to Gifford Hill. Did I understand you to say that they paid $15 million for this land?
$6,000 to $7,000 an acre, which works out to about $15 million on 2,500 acres.
And if it's not taxed as you have proposed it, what is the valuation?
$142,000.
Or how much an acre?
$57. If you do what they want you to do, if you play their shell game, and that's what this case is all about, they're trying to get you to help them hide the P, and the P is $7.5 million in value.
They pay $15 million for $7.5 million current value.
Yes, they did.
Your position is that if you do not prevail, they're paying taxes on this land as if it were $57 an acre instead of the $6,000 an acre that they really paid for?
Exactly. They didn't buy this land to farm it.
You know that. I know that. They know that.
But you are you saying then that we should interpret Section 1041C as a mine or quarry or reserve, therefore?
Well, the common definition of a mine or quarry includes the ore to be extracted from that mine or quarry. That's what the Court of Appeals said. That's the game they're playing here. If you look under the various shells trying to find the $7.5 million, if you look under the one called mine or quarry, they say, well, that's the hole in the ground. Not the hole of the ground, but the hole in the ground. There's no $7.5 million there because a hole's not worth $7.5 million. You don't want to buy a gold mine from these people because all you get is the shack. If you look under D and you say it's a mineral in place, that's where the $7.5 million is. They say, oh no, limestone's not a mineral. And they cite you back to the cases where this court's trying to protect the ignorant from the greedy. Oil and gas conveyance cases, where people have tried to say oil, gas, and other minerals in this lease mean everything.
Counsel, aren't you really trying to circumvent this open land exemption or the agricultural exemption?
No, Your Honor. We have given them $2 million worth of value down to $142,000 worth of value because we feel that the $2 million represents what that land is worth without the limestone. That's what it's worth in the marketplace up there for agriculture. That's been collapsed into the $142,000. We've already given them a great tax break. But we don't want to give it on the mineral. And we do say limestone is a mineral. In every case, conveyance case, that's been heard, this court has said lignite's not a mineral, iron ore's not a mineral, limestone's not a mineral. But only in the nature of those cases are they not minerals. But their response is, well, it's not a mineral because of the conveyance case. If you look in the code, 23...
Your time's up, but if you had 3 minutes, what would you say?
If I had 3 minutes, what I'd say, if you look in the code, we're not talking about mineral estate versus surface estate. Those phrases aren't used. 23.17 is clearly talking about exactly this kind of mineral. Minerals which can be removed by surface mining and quarrying. Well, if it includes these kinds of minerals in 2317, it certainly includes it in 104, and it certainly includes it in 2352.
Counsel, could you comment briefly on petitioner's charge of double valuation, double taxation?
Well, we think that is a non-issue, multiple appraisal. How can you multiply appraise something, but at the same time say the value is not excessive? Remember, they've conceded the value issue. Our value is not excessive, but it is multiple. That simply is impossible. The way you prove multiple appraisal is you prove that the value of the component pieces is more than the value of the whole. That's what Section 23.17 tells us. You can't value the component pieces at more than the whole. But when the whole has been clearly identified in separate components and you're not arguing about the value, value is not excessive, how can you come back and say it's multiple? Back to their shell game. You look under here, one of the places not there. You look under a state or interest, sometimes it's leased property, and they say, oh, well, that's taxable to the lessor under 25.06 of the code, and they ignore the definition of possessory interest in 1.04 subsection 16. If you finally get back to land, you say, okay, we're going to look under that shell to find that $7.5 million. Their response is, aha, we fooled you again. The value of the limestone, the value of the non-agricultural component of this land goes away because we get ag use. They fly right in the face of Section 2352F. And we say, even if you tell us to call it land, we are still directed by 2352F to take out the value of land that's attributable to the minerals. Look at the hole outside this building. That's what's going to be left in Wise County. This is a small version of their quarry. Tell me how long cattle can survive in the bottom of that. This is not an ag use question. Ag use hasn't been in this case. We granted them ag use on the portion of the property related to that use.
But doesn't the surface mining statutes provide for replacement to apply here?
You know, I don't know how long it takes to reclaim a pit that's 100 feet deep.
But in recent years, people who surface mine gravel and stone are under the same provisions about replacing the surface that a lignite miner is, are they not?
I really don't know, Your Honor. That's outside this case. That's never been an issue. I know the reclamation group's
comparison, though. By your comparison, I would say that you're leading us to believe that it's just going to be an empty hole.
Well, let me say this. It's going to be 100 feet lower than everything else in the county, and it's going to be 2,500 acres in size. And it's going to have a bottom that doesn't look like any ranch land you've ever seen before. Ag use was designed to preserve land in open space. That's not what Gifford Hill's doing here. They're digging a hole, and they're going to leave a hole. And when they leave Wise County, they will leave it with all the money they took out of this rock and some of the money they got from their grazing lease. But they're not going to leave the tax dollars they should have paid on this lignite, because that's why they brought the property.
Limestone.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I have to stand and make two points right at the very beginning. One is in response to, and I guess affirmation of your comment, Justice Hightower. I rarely have seen statements so outside the record as to what this property is going to be like after Gifford Hill leaves, what it's going to look like, what they're going to do with it, all that sort of thing. That clearly is not in the record, and I think it's a hyperbole of the highest order. With respect to your comment, Justice Doggett, there is absolutely no evidence in this record. You can comment from beginning to end, and there's no evidence in this record that suggests that Gifford Hill paid $15 million for this property. What Mr. Graham is saying is there is some evidence that on the date a deposition was taken of a Gifford Hill employee, he said that they were paying approximately $6,000 an acre for land then. This property was acquired over a long period of time, and there's nothing in this record as to suggest what its acquisition price was. It was acquired in multiple parcels, and I'm sure the average was significantly lower. It may even be down in the neighborhood of what the ag use value was.
Not $57 an acre.
We don't know what it was. We don't know whether it was 800, whether it was 6,000, or whether it was 57.
So you do know, but it's not a record.
I don't know.
Well, your clients know. But
the clients definitely know, yes.
Well, and that was probably all looked at in reaching the valuation that you're not challenging.
Correct.
So we're not.
Right.
What is the he's getting outside the record on the reclamation issues or not, the substance of his concluding remarks, I wish you would address that your client over this 25-year period will leave Wise County with a lot of limestone and the profits therefrom, but little, if anything, in the way of taxes for what they removed.
Well, the way I
the point there is, I think his argument was, sounds good, is that the agricultural use provision was designed to preserve land and open space, and that is not what will happen here. That was not the reason the land was acquired. It was acquired with the design of not leaving open space, but leaving a hole in the ground. I think if you can address it in that context.
Okay. Justice Gamage, Justice Doggett, I can understand your concern about that question. The fact of the matter is the open space land doctrine in Texas is a constitutional mandate which presupposes there is a desire by the people of the state of Texas to maintain open space land. Over the course of the next 25 years, it's not in the record, but you've posited that that's what we're talking about, that land is going to be open space land, at least in part. That portion of it that is not produced is going to be open space land and qualify for ag use treatment because cattle are grazed on it and it meets the qualification for ag use. He didn't say, he said a lot of stuff, but one thing he didn't say is that it didn't qualify because it sure as heck does. All right. There may be some problems with that with that particular statute and with that particular constitutional provision, but they're not before you today. The fact of the matter is the taxpayer is entitled to being taxed if it qualifies for open space land on the basis of its productivity capacity, not what a willing buyer would pay a willing seller at the time of the appraisal. Now, that's the case whether or not it happens that the property lies in the right-of-way of a new superhighway, whether it's in the shadow of a super collider, whether it's within walking distance of a new regional shopping mall. The land in those situations may be worth 5,000 times what the productivity value is if you use the market value. But the people of Texas have said in their constitution and in their statutes that it's worth it. We're going to trade that tax value in for the preservation of open space. And at least for that portion of the time that this property is not being produced, they're going to get what they paid for.
How large is the area that is being produced now?
Justice Hightower, that's really not in this record. At least if it is, I can't remember, but it's a relatively small portion, certainly not greater than 50 or 75 acres, maybe 100.
Is that taxed in a different manner?
It isn't today. We don't think that we think it should be. I mean, the way it should be orderly, the way the orderly tax administration should work is that it should be taxed as a minor quarry. The buildings are being taxed separate under the improvements category. And the extracted rock is being taxed as personal property. That's one, by the way, Justice Gamage asked that question, is there severance tax imposed upon the rock after it's been extracted? And the answer is I don't believe so, but it is taxed as personal property of Gifford Hill once it's been taken out of the ground. If I may, in conclusion, I just want to say that, and I've pretty much dealt with this issue concerning the open space land doctrine, but I just want to reemphasize that the issue of rollback, that in fact, he says that there is an undisputed methodology employed to appraise this property. Well, that's not correct. We dispute it. But even using theirs, it's all going to be used up in 6 years, as Chief Justice Phillips has pointed out. The rollback statute applies for 5 years. They'll recoup it all. This phantom value that's going to be lost or is going to be under one of the cut, he uses the shell game metaphor, you know, that just doesn't hunt in this case because ultimately the tax dollars will be there. This is a highly charged political issue to gain sympathy back in Wise County and to allow you all to have a policy consideration on the basis of which you can rule in their favor. I submit to you that the issue of whether this property is reclaimed or not is not before Your Honor. It's not before this court. The issue is whether in 1987 the surface can be taxed, including the limestone reserves, and then the same limestone reserves can be broken out and taxed in a separate account, which essentially results in a per se violation of the tax code and double taxation. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Your Honor?
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity.
That concludes the argument in the second call. The court will take another recess.